All right, listen to WRUV FM Burlington. This is James with the Rated Lyceum. We're going over a little bit. We've got another 10 minutes left on this. But transition, some Fairport Convention, Autopsy. So keep on listening. This is a great album. Shout out to Robert Haggerty to clue me into this album. So it's a great one.
Emphasize both that different groups are involved in different kinds of decisions. They typically acknowledge that most of those groups are dominated by elites. But even though they're dominated by elites, they argue that often there's enough conflict one way or the other that those elites have to mobilize some support from a broader public to get their way. That is, you want to build that thing, by the end, you've got to include some middle-income and low-income housing, or the thing is not going to happen. So there's compromise. That's another part of their model. Nobody gets everything he or she wants. It's always compromise. They're very important compromise. And then one additional element of the pluralist way they imagine the world, which is, so different groups matter in different arenas. Why? Because different people and different groups care about different things. And the underlying principle, there's this paper by Norton Long called Local Politics is an Ecology of Games. It's a kind of cumbersome title, but the summary of his position is it's a matter of, quote, whose ox is gored? Meaning, if your issue is the important issue, you can almost always find a way to have some influence. So most people don't have power over most issues because most people don't care about most issues very much. So if you look, for example, at abortion politics in the U.S., the group that has in the past, actually up until this election, been the most mobilized around abortion issues are the pro-life coalition. They really, 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 really care. So even if their point of view represents less than a majority of the population, and it turns out actually abortion attitudes have drifted up and down, but there's a pretty strong majority for abortion in at least some, I think vast majorities for save the life of the mother and so on and so forth. But But how easy it should be to get an abortion. There's a lot of that attitudes on that drift around. But there's one group that has an incredibly passionate, they care tons about it. So they have a disproportionate influence because they really, really, really care. And they're willing to trade off all the other issues in order to get what they want on that issue, right? And so the coalition around schooling has been able to have a huge influence on California politics because there is a group of actors, including teachers' unions, who really care about schooling for children. And so they actually are very important players there. And here's where pluralist theory even speaks to social movement theory. I'm not going to talk about social movements much until you'll see the last week's readings have to do with that. But the idea is that even a group that has basically no power is excluded from politics, as African Americans largely were before World War II, when most, not all, but most of the black population lived in the South, and that population had been completely disenfranchised by Jim Crow. So you have a big, big population who really aren't participating in pluralist politics, but the pluralists say at some point that group can organize, as it in fact did, and mobilize and demand to start becoming a player in the political system. And at the point where people organize and fight, and then they may have to fight outside the political institutions because the political institutions have frozen them out, they also can have an influence, right? So the idea here is if different groups participate in different political arenas, and you start with the political arenas, and then you look at who has power, you don't find a unified power elite. You find elites, but lots of different players. And even some of the groups, like teachers' unions, say, aren't necessarily so elite. Again, they're not usually the very poor. That, I think, no pluralist would argue that this means we have political equality. They really don't. But they have a model in which lots and lots of groups can influence the political process if their issue, the thing that really matters to them, becomes an issue. So that's the argument. Pet owners. Now there's, you know, most people aren't totally fanatical about leash laws. There are different sides. Some people are afraid of dogs. They don't want to get bitten by somebody on some trail somewhere. They don't want to have to deal with dog dew on their shoes. But pet owners really, really care about having places where their pets can run free and be off the leash and stuff. You will find local pet owner associations who actually manage to get changes in the local regulations, or another example, very important, San Francisco bicycle riders. To the degree they organize as a coalition and they have their Fridays when they ride bikes, mass, whatever it's called, and they sort of force BART to allow bikes on all day long and so forth. So you can see how groups mobilize around the thing that really matters to them, and that's the pluralist idea. Now, what's the critique of pluralism? And it's a very, very serious one. Well, there are several, but the major critique is that, well, first of all, that in fact these groups are so unequal. Yeah, you can influence the regulations about bike riding in San Francisco, and the powerful capitalists can influence the entire tax code, the entire way the financial system is regulated, the entire way industry is regulated, and you can't do squat about these big issues. So yeah, you can influence the tiny issues and they can influence the really, really big ones. So one critique is that this is sort of an image that makes things sound a lot more equal. Like you can do the thing you want and they do the thing they want. And the thing you really care about is bicycles and maybe a stop sign on your corner. And the thing they really care about is the entire nature of American capitalism and the proportion of the gains of capitalism that will go to them versus to everyone else. That'd be one critique. But the sort of more, I don't know, sophisticated methodological critique is, if you focus on decisions, you can only study the issues that actually get decided. And the ones that never come up, never, the pluralist has no way of talking about them. And in fact, some of the most sophisticated work in this area is the attempt to define and study non-decisions. So how do things that could become political issues get pushed so far off the table that either they can't even be imagined, like, you know, let's have a socialist economy in which everyone gets an absolutely equal share of the proceeds of the collective labor of everyone. That's not even debatable. So, and I'm not advocating this, but if you did advocate it, you'd just be, and there probably are some little socialist groups somewhere who do advocate it, you'd just be laughed off the, I mean, there's no way, there's nobody who imagines that as a realistic possibility in America. So there's no decision being made. And there are many, many non-decisions, like decisions, say, to regulate environmental dangers that we don't even know about or that no group is pushed. So there are a lot of groups pushing a lot of issues. And if you really did this right, you might have an incredibly wide range of, quote, decisions to look at. But the point of the critiques of the pluralist theory are that a lot of those issues never even come up for debate. And so when you focus on decisions, you focus only on the things that had enough power behind them to come up, and that a lot of power has actually been exercised prior to that in defining the range of legitimate debate. So the way in American society today, if you even start talking about making the society more equal, you're accused of class warfare and socialism. That is a way of making certain things off the table. You can't even discuss them. And that's what the critics of pluralism worry about. Okay, I'm going to go to the next argument. Oh, let me just say, I've had this slide in several lectures. I've wanted to show it. I'm going to show it here. Because one thing the pluralists focus on, believe it or not, is voting. So one of the really important ways people exercise influence, according to the pluralist model, is not in back rooms where everything's being decided by a secret cabal. There may even be back rooms and secret cabals that would like to have their way. But in order to get their way, they pretty much have to find some group of voters who will elect somebody who will eventually make the decision the way these power holders want. And they may, as your book this week shows, use money to get that. But they have to translate their money somehow or other into votes.
Okay, that's the end of this week's lectures that we're covering from Ann Swindler from her Sociology 1 course from UC Berkeley in 2012 is when this lecture happened. So that ends this, the end of Radio Lyceum. We usually sometimes go over, especially if we start a little bit late on the series that we're trying to cover, or I talk too much, either one of those. So you can contact me through the email that we have set up for the radio show, radiolyceum@protonmail.com. That's RIDIOLYCEUM, no spaces, all one word, @protonmail.com. So let's play a little more music, and not Ted, we'll play you some more music. That's my other name. That's my DJ name, and not my talk show host name. So anyway, I'll see you guys. We'll be here next week. It should be fun and exciting. I'm not sure what we'll be covering next week. I'm getting near the end of this lecture series. And we'll probably be moving on to a few more other topics. Hopefully, we'll be getting some more interviews because coming in November, I'll be back in Burlington and be able to reach out a bit more. And I'll probably have a little more time to set up interviews. So anyway, we'll play music. So we're going to start out with Music Alone by Martha Aleto. So keep on listening. Your better alternative, WRUV FM Burlington, for a little bit more. And then eventually I'll be going to Automation, because there's no DJ on after me. That's sad. That's very sad.
A boy, not long ago.
Thank you. Thank you.